case, please?
Okay, we have a confession of error by the prosecution, and prosecution indicates it has no objection to remand this case back for okay. And so what is the standard of review of a confession of error? Prosecution concedes error, it is incumbent on the appellate court first to ascertain that the confession of error is supported by the record and well-founded in law, and second, to determine that such error is properly preserved and prejudicial. In other words, the confession of error by the prosecution is not binding upon an appellate court, nor may a conviction be reversed on the strength of the prosecutor's official action alone. So that's what we need to determine. And so is there any law for the proposition that where the charged offense trial court finds the defendant guilty on the charged offense, but there is insufficient evidence to support that offense, that a lesser included offense may be found by the court to have been violated, and a guilty plea, I mean a guilty verdict entered.
On the primary charge?
On the primary charge, it's insufficient evidence. Okay, but you have a lesser included offense. Are we permitted to send it back for a determination that the included offense is to be entered?
I think the problem that we have here, Your Honor, is the fact that the jury was never given the included offense instruction. I think we were stuck with the fact that the primary offense instruction was given, and the appellant was, or the petitioner was exposed to jeopardy at that point. The jury had its decision, and the
that the ICA agreed with the trial court that the entry was not illegal, right? So that's the law so far now. As you sit here today, that the ICA is willing to let this stand? Why don't you proceed?
Good afternoon, Gerald Johnson, court-appointed counsel for Melody Line Petitioner. May it please the court. I would reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. First of all, as we just went over, we're in agreement that the conviction should be reversed. There was no evidence that Melody Line had any knowledge of the underlying charges. The two police officers who stormed her house, Sergeant Kikuchi and Officer Pereira, admitted on cross-examination that they did not inform her of the charges against her son. Under hindering prosecution first degree, they had to prove it was a felony offense. So we are in agreement with the state's position that jeopardy has attached and the conviction should be reversed and the case be remanded. However, Melody Line insists, and I agree with her, that her constitutional rights were violated here, and we would like a bright line rule in this case. The statute was unconstitutionally applied to her, her criminal act. If we view the evidence in the light most favorable to the state, basically what she did was she stood in the doorway.
Mr. Johnson, before you go further, is there law in this jurisdiction which would permit the court to vacate the conviction for hindering prosecution in the first degree, but find that there was sufficient evidence, i.e. there was evidence of use of force to prevent apprehension of Dean, but without proof that the petitioner knew that the apprehension was for a felony, which would enable this court to then send the case back with instructions to enter a conviction for the lesser included offense of hindering prosecution in the second degree.
Is your question, is there
authority to do that?
I think that the authority is the Constitution here, that this court is required to review the statute and what happened in this case as it affects the Constitution. I think Judge Cardozo, who's a great judge, did not look at it in a constitutional way. It was basically, here's a statute, the statute is violated, she's guilty of the offense. I think it's the Constitution that mandates this court to review it to see whether...
Would it violate double jeopardy for this court to enter a conviction on the lesser included offense if there was sufficient evidence admitted at trial to find her guilty of hindering prosecution in the second degree?
I believe there is, Your Honor. I don't have the case citation, but I do recall a case where the court did...
Would that be the appropriate course in this case?
Well, I believe the appropriate court in this, what the court should do in this case is to find that the actions were unconstitutional and that her conviction should be vacated on those grounds. I don't think that the court should remand this case and have her be convicted of the lesser charge.
So what would be the constitutional grounds?
The constitutional grounds is that she has a right to stand in her doorway and block police when they're trying to come in. That even though the statute itself prohibits that, under these circumstances, police did not have, they needed a warrant to go in there. They already had the evidence against Dean. You know, they had stopped him 3 days before. They had confiscated his pipe. They tested it. They had the evidence. So there was no need to go get evidence or that evidence might be destroyed. There was no fear he might harm them because basically he's in the driveway fixing his car. You know, they can get an arrest warrant or a search warrant. So I believe it's this court's duty to review the facts of this case as the Constitution looks at it. And a citizen has a right to say, if you don't have a warrant, you cannot come into this place. And she was acquitted on the charge of assaulting the police officer. So I don't think you could even say that she's using force. I mean, basically, she's using passive force, or I guess the worst that she did was maybe possibly grabbed the shirt of Kikuchi as he's trying to go into her house. But she was acquitted of the charge of assaulting the police officer. So it's not really that she was doing self-help. She was saying, don't come in my house unless you have a warrant. And that is a constitutionally protected thing to do. It's like Rosa Parks sitting on the bus. It's like you have to put a stop to it. I mean, basically, that's it.
Mr. Johnson, you believe that there was enough evidence for the included offense, the lesser included offense?
I do think there was, yes.
You took the tactic, however, to
go for the acquittal. I went for the acquittal, and as I put in my supplemental brief, I think it's a very scary thought that police can just basically enter your house whenever they get the urge, and if you don't let them in, you get arrested for hindering prosecution. So I think it's a lot easier for the jury to do a compromise verdict. That's why I did not request the instruction. We were going for the acquittal. So it was a strategical, and then it was actually the basis of my post-verdict motion. It was on those grounds that they didn't prove there was a felony, but that motion was denied. But again, I believe that the big issue here is the constitutional issue, and it's not really an easy thing, I think, for the trial court to look and say, oh, wait a minute, this is unconstitutional. But I think it's the duty of this court to be looking at it and reviewing what happened in this case under the Constitution. And to me, it's just absolutely clear that this is prohibited, what the police did and what she did. Her actions were constitutionally protected. Just like, even though those cases I cited about First Amendment don't really apply to this case, but it's pretty much the same thing. If you're doing an act that's let's say free speech, and it's prohibited by a statute, the court should review it and say that's an unconstitutional statute, or it's unconstitutionally applied to this person. So,
Mr. Johnson, hasn't this court in the past said that it's the trial judge's obligation to make sure that jurors are properly instructed in the law, and are kind of taking away the gambling nature of this, and that the spirit of it should be people's culpability should be adequately addressed, and not force the jurors to decide between a charged offense that they think is wrong and nothing, and an acquittal, which may be wrong as well. Shouldn't the trial court always be trying to make sure people are properly instructed? And if, as the Chief Justice says, if the lesser included offense is something she should have been convicted of, shouldn't the trial judge have sua sponte said the lesser included offense should be given?
I think you're absolutely right. I think the law is very clear on that.
So if there's a mechanism for this court to arrive at that result, understanding that the Double Jeopardy Clause may prevent a retrial on the charged offense, if there is a mechanism for this court to do it, wouldn't it be appropriate, as Justice Acoba pointed out, to remand it back with instructions to enter a conviction on the lesser included offense?
If there was no constitutional violation, I think that would be appropriate.
Mr. Johnson, in the Prescott case, didn't the court say that passive resistance would be allowable?
I believe so.
And in that case, it was a person who just wouldn't unlock the door from the inside. Do you think that what Ms. Line did was passive?
It's on the verge of passive. It's slightly more than passive, I think, because if you look at it at the light most favorable to the prosecution, she grabbed the sleeve of a shirt. So, you know, there's a little...
That was after the guy was pushed on her, right? So putting
right.
that aside...
Well, prior to that, it was passive. I mean, you know, her version of the facts is quite different, that, you know, basically she didn't realize they were there until they were inside the house and slapped her down. But as far as the police were concerned, she was blocking the entrance to the doorway, standing there, which would be considered passive, basically standing, not letting them in, wedging herself in the door. So that was a passive thing. And then it was only after they bowled her over that, you know, the little scuffle occurred. But that was according to the police testimony.
Which doorway was this?
This was a balcony doorway. So actually, it's like in the backyard. And actually, there weren't even real stairs to it. They had sort of like logs. So it wasn't like even a real entranceway. It was more like a lanai that could be reached by climbing some logs. And it was a sliding glass door that didn't work too well.
So the door was open, though, right?
Well, that's in dispute. You know, basically, one officer said the door was open. The other officer couldn't remember. I don't think Melody Lyon could remember either. I think maybe they said halfway open, something like that.
What's your answer to the argument that if there is a dispute about whether or not the officers are there properly, that should be resolved later on in court, and that people on the premises shouldn't resist by force? More violence and bodily injury.
I agree with that analysis, and you know that was a big point for Judge Cardozo, but basically that the remedy of suppression of evidence doesn't really apply here. I mean, so there really is no remedy for, you know, Melody Lyon. The judge went through different things that could be done. But, you know, the bottom line is the only thing she could really do is, you know, sue them for assault or sue them for trespass. But that really is not an appropriate remedy. It's a very costly thing to do, and it takes a lot of time. And, you know, it's basically she doesn't have the wherewithal to do that anyway. So I guess the mechanism would be for the motion in limine to say, this case should be dismissed, and that's when the judge should go ahead and dismiss it at that point. So it should be done in the court. I do agree with that, rather than using force to fight the entry.
So in this case where both sides use force, what's the court to do? You say dismiss the case? What's your, quote, remedy?
Well, yeah, my remedy is dismiss the case because of the... Basically, she was standing in the doorway blocking entry, according to the police, saying, do you have a warrant? That is not, you know, force. There was some force used afterwards, but it was very minor, you know, force. It basically, I think holding somebody's sleeve was what the force was, and waving her arms up and down and saying, get out of here, but it...
What was the struggling that was going on?
Well,
that was before Officer Pereira was pushed into her, right?
Well, I don't think there was a struggle before that. According to the police, she wedged herself between the doorway and in the opening so that they couldn't come in. And initially, Officer Pereira said he was trying to, like, reason with her to get in, but then Sergeant Kikuchi just came and bowled him right over, and I think the struggle was, according to Melody Lyon, there really wasn't a struggle, that she just stood up and, you know, what are you doing here? And then she was whacked in the face.
If you dismiss the case, would that signify a public policy that people on the premises may resort to self-help then?
I don't think so, because she didn't really...
Why wouldn't it?
Well, she was passive. All she did was stand in the doorway and say, unless you have a warrant, you can't come in. That's according to the police testimony. She was in the backyard of her property on the second floor. That's not self-help. She didn't use any violence. I think what it does, it creates a bright-line rule so that the police would go to a magistrate and, you know, if they had a warrant, then that they can go in. If they don't have a warrant, that they can't just go in and storm the place. So I think actually if you do a balancing approach, it would set a good policy.
Wasn't there a physical altercation after the police got in the front door, the sliding glass door?
Well, it was basically, you know, they bowled her over, and I think, she was acquitted of assaulting the police officer. I think the allegation was that Officer Pereira got a little scratch to his hand, you know, during the fall or trying to get in, and that was considered enough of an assault. I don't think there was really any evidence of a scuffle other than basically saying that Melody Line was holding Ken Kikuchi's shirt and she ripped his shirt. That was
Was after the fall?
After the fall. I mean, basically, the only thing that the evidence according to the police was she wedged herself in the glass doorway, not letting the police in, and then they bowled her over. Officer Pereira kept going, and Kikuchi was involved in a little bit of a scuffle. That was his testimony.
What is the bright line?
I think the bright line rule is if absent probable cause, you need a warrant to get in, unless there are exigent circumstances or, you know, hot pursuits. Here, there's none of that. So, I mean, it's basically the bright line rule is, you know, it's the well-known rule of, you know, cats, that you need a warrant if you're going to do a search and go in.
Don't we have that already?
I don't think we do, because, you know, look what happened in this case, and actually look at Judge Cardozo, who's a smart judge. He saw this and couldn't see the constitutional issue here, and I think it's up to the Supreme Court to...
Right, do you not think this is similar to a resisting arrest situation where even if it's an unlawful arrest, the idea is not to have people physically resisting because the police are going to be feeling compelled to win those encounters, and that's going to cause an escalation of force. And so what might be permissible in a public venue, the police cannot go into a house, even if they have probable cause, they cannot go into a house to arrest somebody without a warrant. I think that's clear under the law right now. So,
well, while it is clear under the law, that's exactly what happened in this case. So,
so if they had arrested the son and recovered more drugs on him, that would have been suppressed. Or if he had done something else in the house at the time, that would have been suppressed because it was improper. But in a situation like this, as was raised here, wouldn't this encourage people to be physically grabbing on to people, trying to struggle, and the police officer feel we're going to have to win these encounters?
Well, again, that little struggle came after the initial standing in the doorway. I think what it does encourage is for citizens to say, you need a warrant if you're going to, you know, come into this house, which I think is a thing you want to encourage. It's like I mentioned the Rosa Parks. You want to encourage, you know, basically black people to be able to sit on the bus.
Right, and if that's all that happened here, if she just said, you need a warrant, and they said, we're coming in anyway, and they went past her, she would not have been arrested and none of this would have happened.
I don't know about that, because basically that's what she did. She stood there. She's the one who got bowled over. She didn't, you know, go out there and try to, you know, do fisticuffs with the police. All she did was stand in the doorway.
And then grabbed onto him when they were inside and told him to get out. Wasn't that a court finding? Did that happen afterwards? And if she hadn't done that and there was no scratch, none of this would have been happening.
Yeah, although, you know, I think with the scuffle, we really don't know the exact facts. I don't think Sergeant Kikuchi even knew exactly how his shirt got ripped, but essentially while they're, you know, rolling around on the ground because she wouldn't let him in, his shirt is ripped in the process. And so essentially the testimony in the light most favorable for the prosecution is that she is, you know, holding Sergeant Kikuchi. She didn't even remember Officer Pereira.
So is your line at the house?
The bright line at the house.
But it has to be the house.
Yeah, that's what my bright line would be in this case. You are protected in your house. I know the Constitution protects other areas, but I think there's always been a special protection for people in their their homes. And I think the court should enunciate that in this case.
What about the argument that, well, still the police may violate the law and go in as they, in my mind, obviously did in this case, but then what? Then violence may still be engendered. So how do you answer that?
Well, I think you cannot charge the person with the crime of hindering prosecution. If she's going to be arrested, you know, she cannot, resist arrest. But, you know, for an underlying hindering prosecution, there has to be some kind of underlying prosecution. So I don't think this engenders anything other than for a citizen to say, if you know, if you have a warrant, you can come in. If you don't have a warrant, you cannot come in. If the police, you know, go ahead and go in anyway, I don't think, you know, this promotes violence. I don't think it's going to be encouraged. I mean, we're basically restating a well-settled rule of law, but we're applying it to this particular statute in these particular set of circumstances.
If there was no resistance, then we wouldn't have a charge here.
Well, it depends what you call resistance. If you say, you know, standing in the doorway is resistance.
Forced deception or intimidation, which is what your client was charged with.
I don't think there was. There was obstruction. I mean, basically, she stood in the doorway. That was obstructing the apprehension.
Prevents or obstruct.
Yeah, so I think that's all, the jury could really convict her of, is obstructing the means for the police to come enter the house. I don't think there was any, real force, deception, intimidation. It's basically saying, you can't come into this house unless you have a warrant. So unless there's any other questions, I'll reserve the rest for the rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court, good afternoon. Richard Minotoya, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney, County of Maui, for the respondent, State of Hawaii. With regard to the issue of the self-help, I mean, that clearly runs counter to what's set forth in the commentary to the Hawaii Penal Code. You know, the statutes on resisting arrest and escape basically state that, you know, the parties are not entitled to self-help, and the means to contest a wrongful arrest or wrongful detention would be in the courts. And our position would be that would be similar in this case, where, you know, if the police should have had a warrant, then that question should be determined in court later. Somebody shouldn't have the right to just impede officers in trying to perform their duty, because that's how people get hurt. And it's clear on the other statutes in the Hawaii Penal Code that that was what the legislature looked at when it enacted the Hawaii Penal Code.
So you agree that the hindering prosecution and the first degree should be vacated?
That's correct, because in
what about second degree? You said jeopardy attached, and so the case should be dismissed with prejudice.
That's correct. The problem we had was that we chose not to request the instruction. Although the court is responsible ultimately for instructing the jury, we put on the record that we didn't need that instruction. That was the problem that we had. So, you know, it's like...
Do you have authority that in that case...
Unfortunately, I, you know, in the rush to try and prepare the supplemental brief, and then having to do an amended after realizing that the facts weren't there, you know, we didn't have time to actually look for something in depth. Because, you know, I think we, like the court, like the defense at trial, I think we're all of the mistaken impression that it was like a strict liability situation, and it's not. And based on that, you know, when we did the supplemental brief, unfortunately, you know, it went over our head. And in reviewing for this hearing, fortunately, it was in time to do an amended to make it clear that the instruction should have been given. And but it seems to me, as far as, you know, justice and fair play, I mean, we chose to tell the court that the lesser included instruction was unnecessary. I think it's a different situation where we asked for it in the court.
I think it's very kind of you to protect the judge, but the rule, the law, we have cases which say it's the judge's responsibility, and regardless if it's objected to or not, or requested or not requested, the judge has a duty.
And we understand that under Nichols, that's the responsibility. But it appears, again, like I stated earlier, that, you know, the instruction wasn't given. The defendant was found guilty of the greater offense, and, you know, later it's determined that there's insufficient evidence. And clearly there was insufficient evidence in this case, because nobody apparently testified that they told the defendant that her son was wanted for felonies.
What's your position on drawing the line at warrantless entries into a house?
You know, the bottom line is, I think Judge Alm is correct. The law is already in place. The law is clear. And I think the other distinction is the fact that she wasn't the one that was being sought to be arrested. It was her son. So, the constitutional protections would apply to her son. She chose to jump in and impede the officers in their pursuit.
Isn't it her house?
That's correct. However,
doesn't the Constitution protect her and her house?
That's correct. However, it wasn't made clear in the argument earlier, but he was being pursued by the police from outside the house. And then he jumps up on the balcony, opens the door, and runs in while calling out, "Mom, Mom, Mom." So she decides to jump up, and then the description was holding on to the door and wedging between the post, the doorpost. And that's quoting Officer Pereira. So it wasn't a passive blocking the door, standing in the doorway type of thing. She was wedging herself in there.
Meritoria, this is 4 days after they could have arrested him, right?
And that's correct.
Well, so the first day they saw the crime, they didn't arrest him, right?
Because he had agreed to
whatever
set up the,
for whatever reason,
the dealer.
For whatever reason, they didn't arrest him.
That's correct. And then the next day they didn't do anything. Well, the next day they
the
came back.
Day, the second day they didn't do anything either.
And
they could have gotten a search warrant, couldn't they? Couldn't
that's
they have
correct.
Gotten a search and arrest warrant?
That's
they
correct.
Could have gotten an arrest.
That
warrant.
Is correct.
Okay. And then the third day, they didn't do anything. The fifth day,
fourth day.
They show up without anything again. Are they in uniform?
The testimony was they're in plain clothes with their guns and badges exposed.
And so they rush into the house and bowl over.
Well, they see him outside and chase after him, who he runs in the house.
What exception to the Fourth Amendment does that fall under?
Well, I think as far as he's concerned, the son, I mean, there is a question, and I think we would say...
Even with respect to the son, what exception to the Fourth Amendment does that fall under?
We had this difficulty after the fact looking at this case for this proceeding. When I looked at it, that, you know, I was of the opinion that they should have gotten a warrant. But, you know, we're dealt the hand that we're dealt with, and they decided to go pursue him, and, you know, then she decides to block the doorway. You know, I think the question of the warrant is neither here nor there. I think the question is whether she's impeding the apprehension of her son, rightful or wrongful arrest of her son. She's impeding that arrest.
So the police are there illegally. They're pursuing someone through a house where they have no right to be, but it's Mrs. Lyon that ends up with a criminal conviction.
The problem is, again, it comes back down to, do people have the right to use self-help? And that is not what apparently the law is supposed to be, according to the commentary to the Hawaii Penal Code.
So the effect or the consequence of upholding the conviction would be that police are not subject to any sanctions as a result of this, are they? Or they're, and but the people whose rights are violated can be convicted.
Well, you know, I think that there are other means for her to invoke her right. You know, it's, whether it's in civil court or what have you. But I think, you know, as far as the issue of the police pursuing the suspect, you know, if it's determined after the fact that that was improper, at the time, I don't think, you know, there's any issue that self-help should be one of the means of, or one of the remedies to any person present. I think it's clear that the desire to avoid the potential for injury or death is more important than, you know, the legal questions that can properly be addressed later. I think the immediate response is not to impede or obstruct the arrest that's taking place.
Mr. Minotoya, what is your answer to the question as to whether or not your confession of error now is well-founded, the case should be dismissed?
I think it's clear that there's no evidence to show that she knew. She was, well, intentionally, so she was aware, believed, or hoped that he was being pursued for a felony. The remand issue?
The remand issue in terms of second degree included offense.
Well, I think, you know, in terms of remanding with orders to order the conviction for the lesser offense, I think that violates her right to have the jury make the determination. I think a jury should actually be the one to decide whether or not we even meet the threshold to, you know, of convicting her for the hindering prosecution and second degree offense. I think, you know, as far as that's concerned, I think that's only fair, given how this case came about and how the error happened.
Anything else?
Unless the court has any further questions.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Johnson, anything? Thank you, counsel. We take this matter under advisement.